Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. This is John Vecchione, and I'm here with Mark Chenoweth. We have a lot of vaccine-related cases today on whether the federal government is overstretching itself in making mandates for various groups of Americans.
We even have some good news.
And we have some good news on this front. It's interesting. We discussed BST Holdings on our last program, which was the Fifth Circuit case. Just to remind everybody, that's found that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Occupational Safety
Administration,
could not just tell every employer with more than 100 employees that they've all got to be vaccinated. Under penalty of OSHA actions and penalties. And the Fifth Circuit came out with BST Holdings, which was a preliminary injunction, and said, you can't do that. It's not within your ambit. The statute doesn't give you that power. Then the case was immediately transferred because people filed on this in every single circuit. So it went on a wheel, as we call it, and it went to the Sixth Circuit. Where the government immediately moved to get rid of the preliminary injunction. New court, new rules was their idea, I suppose. We'll see how that works out for them.
Forget about the law of the case or anything like that.
Right. I do feel like the Dodgeball movie, bold move, Cotton. We'll see how it works for them.
Underappreciated line. I'm glad you pulled it out.
But in any event, now there's been a lot of activity in this area because the government didn't just move through OSHA to get vaccine mandates. This administration wants to get people vaccinated, probably a worthy goal, because obviously you don't want to have people with no protection against COVID. But the question that, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and that is also the road of administrative overreach. We're doing good. We always are empowered to do good. Well, that would mean that Congress could just pass a law that says the agency shall do good, but that would violate the non-delegation doctrine, would cause all kinds of problems. And by and large, the government's defense in all these actions for preliminary injunction is we're doing good.
Right. It would divest legislative power from Congress to the executive agencies.
Exactly. And the fact is, there's tons of governments around the world that are empowered to do good, and you wouldn't want to live there. In any event, here is the so I'm just going to give a sort of recap. First, I will give our case, which is Rodden versus Anthony Fauci et al. Rodden et al. Versus Anthony Fauci et al. We sued on the federal employer mandate. So this is under President's Executive Order 14043. The president ordered an executive order that all agencies have to have all their employees vaccinated or fire them. And we had 11 plaintiffs in this case, but 10 of them had gone for religious exemptions. That's important for reasons we'll note later. But one had not, and she worked for ICE. And what the court said in this case was interesting. The court didn't mention the executive order in and of itself. We had sued to stop the executive order, and the preliminary injunction was not granted in this case because the court said, well, they're not being hurt because the government's not going to do anything to them while the religious exemptions, and the other person, even though she's under the Department of Homeland Security, her real agency is ICE. So you got to sue ICE for me to do anything. So for that reason, it wasn't granted. But the last paragraph is very interesting. The court believes the constitutional questions this case raises are serious and concerning. But because the individual plaintiffs have either failed to show the likelihood of imminent and irreparable harm, meaning the government's not doing anything to them right now, or have failed to sue any defendant the court could enjoin to actually prevent such harm, the court cannot issue the requested preliminary relief.
Which I would take issue with the second half of that. But
I would take issue too, but you know, we're lawyers without black robes, Mark. And so RSA doesn't go. But the fact is, he took all these matters seriously, and he and Judge Brown moved very fast on this. There was an incredible flurry of briefing and an enormous amount of paper in front of him, and he committed to the parties to get it done before the 28th, because that's when the government was going to start firing people. And he got it out before the 28th and gave us sort of a roadmap of what he thinks. And then that Monday, the government came out and issued a federal order saying, hey, don't fire anyone till January. So right. What they did
the lawsuit may have helped lead to that outcome. I don't think you should discount that possibility.
Or at least because the harm now is not imminent to these, at least not for 30 days, right? I think it's January 6th or January 4th, something like that. So I think they've decided.
Well, Christmas runs through the Feast of the Epiphany or something like that, right?
Exactly.
So it better not start before the 6th.
Exactly. So the fact is that the imminent harm nature, and I'm just going to mention it now because it comes up in everyone, is to get a preliminary injunction, as all the courts are going to tell you, is an extraordinary remedy that courts don't want to give one side or the other a benefit unless it really has to preserve the status quo so that everything doesn't change before they get a chance to look at the law. So Judge Brown took that extraordinary remedy very seriously, and he took the harm seriously. I think he had the EO. We sued the United States of America, and he certainly had the power to stop them from doing things. But in any event, we will revisit that, I'm sure, in a future radio show. But I want to then bring up what happened in quick succession after Judge Brown stated this. Case came out on 11/29, the state of Missouri versus Joseph Biden et al. They're all et al. So everyone in the world has been sued and has sued. And that was on, that's on 11/29 out of the Eastern District of Missouri. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services had issued a federal vaccine mandate because the government wanted everyone to be vaccinated. And this had to deal with healthcare workers. So all healthcare workers had to be vaccinated. And that court enjoined that vaccine mandate for healthcare step against any and all Medicare and Medicaid certified providers and suppliers within the states of Alaska, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming, pending trial on the merits of this action or until further order of this court.
Quite an eclectic group of states.
Well, New Hampshire is the one that sticks out there. But the fact is, the state of Missouri and all these states had filed. And one of the good things about being a state is you get a little bit more standing, I would say. The courts are much, you have a lot of interests, and the courts are willing to say, well, one of your interests is affected here. So that in those states, that CMS, what we call the CMS vax mandate, was enjoined for those states. Then the day after that, out of Western District of Louisiana, Monroe Division District Court, State of Louisiana et al. Versus Xavier Becerra, the issue before this court is whether the plaintiffs are entitled to preliminary injunction against the government's defendants as a result of COVID-19 CMS vaccine mandate. And they said, yep, they are. So this is a second case that came out. But they enjoined a different they did pretty much the whole country. He said, for the reasons set forth in this court's ruling, plaintiff state's motion for preliminary injunction is granted. Therefore, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, along with their directors, employees, administrators, and secretaries, are hereby enjoined and restrained from implementing the CMS mandate as to all healthcare providers, suppliers, owners, employees, and all others covered by said CMS mandate. And right.
So even though the plaintiff states here were Louisiana, Montana, Arizona, Alabama, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Utah, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio, the judge here, is it pronounced Doughty?
That's what I believe.
That's how it's spelled. So Judge Doughty appears to have issued a nationwide injunction. So similar ruling, except broader in scope to the one out of St. Louis.
Right. And we see this a lot. The courts, depending on the courts, believe different things about injunctions. On the one hand, some say, hey, look, it's the same for everybody, so it should cover the whole nation. And others say, hey, they complained about these specific states and these specific areas, and I am a court of limited jurisdiction and I should allow other courts to function. So it is a big debate in the law right now about this nationwide injunction. And I think we've done it before and I'm sure we'll do it again, but you see it working out there. But the fact is now there's a number of injunctions that the government has to get around on that particular one. Then also on 11/30/21 came out Commonwealth of Kentucky et al. Versus Joseph R. Biden in his official capacity. And this was a different mandate. This was federal contractors. The government contracts with enormous amount of people in order to get its work done. And it affects the economy enormously. And they said anyone who's a federal contractor for the U.S. Has to have all of its employees vaccinated. Now, and the subcontractors. So if you're a federal contractor and you decide you're the guy in charge of, let's say, building a military base somewhere, and you're building the military base and you subcontract these guys to, put up fences or something, those guys have to have their employees vaccinated just because you're putting up fences outside for these folks. We'll be back in a minute to explain the rest of it. Welcome back to Administrative Static. I would like to finish up on Commonwealth of Kentucky, and that was the federal contractor case that enjoined the government from forcing all the federal contractors to vaccinate everybody or fire them. And what that did, I'll just tell you where that is. He permanently enjoined the federal contractors' vax mandate in Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee. But there's a common theme running through all these cases that we've just mentioned, which is very heartening. Because as you will recall, when we discussed the CDC moratorium, it took forever for the courts to put in injunctions and stop the government from doing something that was obviously beyond its statutory power. It took a year and a half. Here, a flurry of courts have either enjoined it immediately or said, this is very serious. And if you take care of my problems on this issue or that issue, I'd enjoin it too. I mean, that's basically what's going on here in the four cases we've discussed. And they're very similar. In Kentucky versus Biden, the federal contracting law, what he says here is that, look, it does not give them this power. First, what's its purpose? Its purpose is to allow that contracts, the government has access to the full power of, American free enterprise. And what this does is constricts it. And that's going to be a theme that the actions on the vax mandate are counterproductive. All these courts said, well, if you get a vax mandate, you kind of run against the statute because you're going to shrink the availability to medical attention. You're going to shrink the ability to federal contracting. And all cases say that. And then, as in Kentucky, he says, there are several concerning statutory and constitutional implications from President Biden exceeding his authority under the FPASA. The three a particular concern, our Competition and Contracting Act. That's, hey, we want to get everybody in the pool here so we get the lowest prices for the government and the best services. The non-delegation doctrine. That is, Congress didn't exactly say you can do this. And then finally, and if they can do it so vaguely, there is a huge problem with federalism. So we're not going to allow that. And then finally, the 10th Amendment. This case in Kentucky said very clearly, look, this is a state matter. What you do on federal vaccinations is a state matter. And the most important thing, I think, is he cites BST, even though he's outside that circuit. He doesn't have to follow it. He says, this is very persuasive stuff because I think that OSHA has a closer nexus to disease in the workplace than the federal contractor does. And yet I thought the BST holding was very persuasive and it applies a fortiori. That means with more strength here. And then he goes on with the 10th Amendment. So that type of overreach and lawlessness is also called out in the state of Louisiana, Mark. And I think that the state of Louisiana case really starts hitting how counterproductive these mandates are.
One of the things that jumps out at me, John, is the judge there, Judge Dowdy, invokes the Alabama Association of Realtors case. So exactly to your point about the judges moving more quickly here than they did against the nationwide eviction moratorium. He says, you know, that case warrants discussion that in finding the nationwide eviction moratorium was beyond CDC's authority. The CDC had a statute that was more broadly worded than the one that CMS uses in this case. And so he really focuses on the fact that CMS does not have the authority to do what it's trying to do here, just based on the sort of general authorization statute that it's relying on. And this gets back to the major questions doctrine. And he says that Congress must speak clearly if it wishes to assign to an agency decisions of vast economic and political significance. And that didn't happen here. And he also quotes the Fifth Circuit's BST Holdings decision saying there's no clear expression of congressional intent to convey OSHA such broad authority. And so, and this court will not infer one. And so the same goes here. So, and then he also talks about the non-delegation doctrine and all of the reasoning really, I think, coheres together to get to the same point that Congress simply hasn't given the agency, CMS in this case, the power to do something this is sweeping.
And that is exactly right. So there's a common theme. Another common theme is, as I said, the counterproductiveness to what the statutes they're relying on say, because the healthcare statutes, Medicare, Medicaid, the judge in Louisiana v. Becerra, he just goes on. He says, wait a second. I have all these affidavits. So all these TROs, you put in declarations, sworn statements by people. And in this case, Jay Bhattacharya, who's also our expert in our case, has put in saying, wait a second. The evidence on natural immunity here is that natural immunity is better than the vaccines, right? And the government can contest that all at once, but it said the government itself has said this. And it's very interesting what he says here. He says that this was arbitrary and capricious under the APA because what the government said was, while a significant number of healthcare staff have been infected with SARS-CoV-2, evidence indicates their infection-induced immunity, also called natural immunity, is not equivalent to receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. And the government just states that. But then the government is now talking about boosters. And what he says is, however, the CDC recently recommended boosters. If boosters are needed 6 months after being, quote, fully vaccinated, how good are the COVID-19 vaccines and why is it necessary to mandate them? And then he contrasts that with
natural immunity.
Right.
Where he says that the CMS's rejection of natural immunity as an alternative is puzzling. And it sounds like part of CMS's problem here is that they didn't provide much in the way of evidence against natural immunity, and CMS had recognized natural immunity at an earlier point in time. And so
instead, they weren't going to mandate anything, and there'd be no mandates. That's the other thing. That's
right.
What they
so the fact that they're switching their position here under administrative law, when an agency switches its position, it has to justify that adequately, and it didn't do so here.
And what he says is on these points is, although CMS spent pages and pages attempting to explain the need for mandatory COVID-19 vaccines, when infection and hospitalizations rate hospitalization rates are dropping, millions of people have already been infected, developing some form of natural immunity. And when people who have been fully vaccinated still become infected, mandatory vaccines as the only method of prevention make no sense. I mean, that's a strong statement. No sense.
It is. It is.
And then he goes on about pretext. And he says that it's the result of President Biden's declaration of his intention to impose a national mandate and not anything that CMS and OSHA have actually found. That's kind of what he's saying there.
And that ties back into what he says earlier in the opinion, where he says, look, the CMS statute is about helping patients and patient well-being, but this mandate instead focuses on the health of healthcare providers, and that's not really the purpose of the statute. So again, we have a situation where the administration is twisting a statute to do something other than what Congress passed the statute to do. And God bless the judge here. He picked up on that and is pushing back on the administrative agency in this instance.
And, you know, he did go through one thing that's interesting about this case is, and also the other cases we've mentioned is that had multiple states, they threw everything in here. And some don't think there's a violation of statute, like certain statutes were relied upon. And the court said, I'm not sure that you're going to win on that one. But here's on this other one, you claimed you will be. And the same thing happened in this Louisiana case. So it's not like these judges are just rubber stamping the plaintiff's views of the case. They are actually very searching on this, and they're saying you haven't proved a likelihood of success on these areas, but you have on this. So they're doing a very searching analysis, I think. But Louisiana
in a very
also
short
found,
time frame.
In a very short time frame. I mean, you know, some of us give these judges a very hard time, but I do think that the fact that they've all moved so quickly with the, you can't imagine the amount of paper that's dropped on them in these cases. And I think they've all moved with just great alacrity, which is very hard to do. And also taking the science and everything. But I do recommend the Louisiana case.
But this does contrast with what we saw in, for example, our Norris v. Michigan State University case,
right,
where there was a little more back of the hand treatment, I think, from the district court there. So it's nice to see that the courts are starting to come around on natural immunity and the lack of statutory authority for these agencies to do
and
what
also,
they're trying to do.
Also irreparable harm. I do think that both the BST case and there's a Cook County judge. I mean, when Texas judges and guys from Cook County who are elected or appointed. Yeah, exactly. When they all say, hey, look, what you do have a right to your own medical decisions. And if we make you make those decisions and then I have to rule later, I can't unmake those decisions for you. I mean, that's irreparable harm.
You can't unvaccinate someone.
You cannot do it. You know. So, but our in Norris, that didn't come through. They just said, well, you get fired. I think that there is somewhat of a split on that because they think firing you is just fine and that's not irreparable harm. Well, I always think of that list of things that can cause ill health and stress and like death of a spouse is like number one, and then get losing your job or moving is, you know, those are very close. And I'm like, all right, not it's kind of cavalier when a life appointed judge says, who cares if you lose your job. But I do think that this is, I think the courts have learned from the early part of the pandemic that you can't just say something's an emergency and we've got to do anything we want. And the fact that they reject some claims and then affirm other claims shows that they're making a searching legal judgment and that they are not just deferring to the executive anymore. They have pretty much gotten out of that business, which they were really in the early days of the pandemic, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it, Mark. But it's a very heartening development.
It is, although it would be more heartening if it weren't just the cases brought by the states that were going the right direction. Some of these private cases need to come out the same way.